Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to a special meeting of the NJEDA Board. At this time, all phone participants are in a listen-only mode. Attendees on Microsoft Teams should remain muted until it is their turn to speak. Please be advised today's meeting is being recorded. When the chairman opens the public comment portion of the meeting, members of the public attending by Teams will be acknowledged to speak first, then by phone. You will be asked to provide your name and any organization with which you are affiliated. Members of the public attending via Microsoft Teams may use the raise hand feature to be placed into a queue to provide comment. Members of the public attending by phone will be advised to press star then one on your telephone keypad to be placed into a queue to provide comment. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing star then two. If you require assistance during the call, please press star then zero. I will now turn the conference over to Chairman Terry O'Toole. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. I would now call the meeting to order and ask Evan to read the open public meeting notice, please.
Sure thing. So in accordance with the Open Public Meetings Act, notice of this meeting has been sent to the Star Ledger, the Bergen Record, and the Trentonian at least 48 hours prior to this meeting, and a meeting notice has been posted on the Secretary of State's bulletin board at the Department of State.
Thank you, Evan. Danielle, can you call the roll, please?
Chairman Terrence O'Toole.
Present.
Vice Chairman Charles Sarlo.
Here.
Bill Elagia.
Here.
Fred Dumont.
Here.
Tim Hillman.
Here.
Robert Shimko.
Here.
Josh Weinrich.
Here.
Aaron Cruz, representing the Office of the Executive.
Here.
Kevin Mistry for State Treasurer Aaron Binder.
Here.
Roberto Soberanis for Acting Commissioner Kevin Jarvis from the Department of Labor and Workforce Development.
Here.
Elizabeth Dragon for Acting Commissioner Ed Potosnak from the Department of Environmental Protection.
Here.
Devon McCurry representing Acting Commissioner Susan Ox from the Department of Banking and Insurance.
Here.
Chairman, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Danielle. I'll now make some brief chairman's remarks. First of all, I'd like to welcome everyone to our virtual August board meeting. We'll consider several board items today, including two investments under the Cultural Arts Facilities Expansion, or CAFE, program. Since its inception, the CAFE program has advanced major capital projects for arts and cultural institutions in the state, ensuring that this sector remains a powerful economic engine and an accessible, welcoming space for all. The arts drive economic growth, creating jobs, supporting families, revitalizing downtowns, and uniting communities. Through arts education and programming, students gain essential skills that prepare them both for life and the workforce. Governor Sherrill recognizes that a vibrant arts sector is vital, not only to our diverse economy, but also to the cultural fabric of the state. Just like last week, Evan was at the Battleship New Jersey announcing a CAFE award, supporting the museum's renovation. The program is delivering real impact across the state, and it's exciting to see these projects take shape. As the board considers investments in the Morris Museum and the iconic Asbury Park Convention Hall today, we continue to build spaces where students, families, and visitors can connect, learn, and experience world-class arts program. When we invest in the arts, we invest in our communities, expanding access to economic opportunity and educational enrichment for every resident. One note before I turn the meeting over to Evan for his CEO's report, I just wanted to thank Mary Maples for her 3 years of service to the EDA, including as interim CEO before Evan's appointment and as deputy CEO. Mary left us at the end of last month, but on behalf of the board, I just want to wish her the best of luck in the next chapter of her career. And with that, I'll turn it over to Evan for the CEO's report.
Thank you, Chair, and I'll actually start where you ended and again thank Mary Maples, whose absence is already felt, and left the EDA after a distinguished service in a few different capacities last Friday. But as for current business, this month, the New Jersey EDA is proud to celebrate National Black Business Month. New Jersey's Black business community has helped build a stronger state economy, and Governor Sherrill is committed to expanding opportunities and cutting red tape, so entrepreneurs in every community and every zip code can open, grow, and expand their business right here in the Garden State. Later this month, the EDA will participate in a small business walk to visit several Black businesses owners in Camden to learn how the state and the EDA in particular can support their success. Last week, NJEDA, in partnership with the African American Chamber of Commerce of New Jersey and Assemblywoman McCoy, sponsored the second annual Filming in the Garden State. The event took place during the 24th annual Run and Shoot Filmworks at the African American Film Festival and brought together leaders from government, business, and film industry to highlight the continued growth of New Jersey's film and television sector. Lieutenant Governor Dale Caldwell joined us there, as did African American Chamber of Commerce New Jersey President John Harmon, Newark Mayor Raz Baraka, Kane University President Lamont Repelet, along with Assemblywoman McCoy, the Chief Community Development Officer of the EDA, Ty Cooper, and Film Commission Team Lead Elizabeth Parchman. As the film industry continues to grow in the state, it will help expand and diversify our economy by creating new jobs and supporting small business across the state through its supply chain. As the chair said, I was recently in Camden last week, where I joined Battleship New Jersey Museum Memorial CEO Marshall Spivak for a press conference to announce a $24 million renovation project for the museum, supported by the authority's CAFE program. It's exciting to support the Battleship New Jersey's improvement project, which will expand access for students, families, and visitors to hands-on educational experiences, ensuring it remains a cultural hub for years to come. From clean energy to community revitalization, Governor Sherrill is moving full steam ahead to bolster our economy and make our state more affordable to live and do business. I want to thank the entire staff for the work and supporting the governor and her mission. Look forward to our work together in the coming months. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Evan. Okay, we're now going to approve meeting minutes from the July board meeting. Before you are minutes from the July 22nd NJEDA board meeting for review and approval, could I request a motion to approve?
Move it, Weinrich.
Thanks, Josh. Second?
Second, Alana.
Assuming no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the minutes are approved. Next, we're going to go to the public comment section of the meeting. I will now open the public comment portion of the meeting. First, I'm going to ask Danielle Esser to share NJEDA's public comment policy and process for this board meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the public who wish to speak during the public comment portion of the meeting will be acknowledged to speak first by Teams and then by phone. Members of the public attending via Microsoft Teams may use the raise hand feature to be placed into a queue to provide comment. Each person will be acknowledged to speak in the order of hands raised. Once acknowledged, please unmute yourself to provide your comment. All members of the public must remain muted following the public comment portion of the meeting. A staff member may mute you if you are unable to remain muted. Members of the public attending by phone who are interested in providing comment will be advised to press star then one to be registered to speak, which will place each person into a queue to provide comment. We will now go over NJEDA's public comment policy, which is also available on the NJEDA website. Each speaker will be prompted to speak one at a time. Each speaker should announce his or her name, organization affiliation, and the topic on which the remarks will be given. Each speaker will have a maximum of 3 minutes to speak and should limit comments to matters pertaining to the authority. Staff will prompt the speaker once their time has expired. A person may not register to speak more than once during the same public comment period to ensure there is enough time available for all those who wish to speak. Related documents, printed comments, or materials may be attached to an email. We look forward to receiving public comment at this time. I'll also note that this month we have a list of folks who have registered to provide public comment in advance, and we're going to call them in that order first, and then we'll go to the teams, and then we'll go to the phone.
Thanks, Danielle. So we're now going to acknowledge members of the public who wish to provide comment at this time. As Danielle said, we have a list of registered commenters and people to comment. And so we're going to start with that on Teams. Danielle, do you want to go
first? Sure, Chairman. Thank you. First, we'd like to acknowledge Mayor John Moore of the City of Asbury Park. Please unmute yourself to provide your comment.
Unmuted.
Yes, John Moore, Mayor Asbury Park. I want to thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to talk about the Convention Hall complex. I'm going to share my memories, my thoughts, and my requests. Some of my memories of the Convention Hall complex are my mother and my aunt being finalists in the Easter Parade or Orchid Promenade, pictures of 100,000 people on the boardwalk during the Easter Parade, my sister's winning awards at the Baby Parade and sitting on Ernie Kovacs' lap as he puffed away on his trademark cigar. Going to see the Harlem Globetrotters. Watching high school basketball at the final games in Convention Hall. Google Bob Verga, a New Jersey boy in the Hall of Fame. Watching Barry Goldwater land in Bradley Park on a helicopter and making a speech at Convention Hall. I like the helicopter better. Lee's Arcade, the VFW car raffles, the photo booth, Frank and Mary's luncheonette. In the 60s, seeing every band except the Beatles two shows a night. In the 80s, working for Tom Gask, who ran the largest ceramic boat show and hunting and fishing show in Central Jersey and maybe the state of New Jersey during the off seasons. Working for the city in the mid to late 90s until 2002, I ran the maintenance end of the complex. The concerts, the operas, the raves, the Sopranos, and of course, Bruce and Danny DeVito and NBC Today Live, and so many other events. Being in charge of the building, I got the brochures through the mail from the National Industry of Venues and Convention Centers. Reading these, I realized most of these venues do not turn a profit. Very few have actually turned a profit. They were not designed for that. Their purpose was to draw tourists to the venue, and the profits were from the ancillary establishments, be it the restaurants, the hotels, the gas stations, et cetera, which create the tourism profits for the city, the county, and the state of New Jersey. The Convention Hall complex is historic, iconic, and wonderful. If we could go back in time, I would ask you all making this vote to talk to two people as to what to do. One, Joe Pelea, a Republican senator from our district who refereed all of the important basketball games. And the second, a Democrat, James Chippy Coleman, a councilman, assembly member, and judge, and one heck of a basketball player. Both of them spent a lot of time in these buildings. I believe they would tell you this is a no-brainer. This is not the house that Ruth built, but it is the iconic complex designed by Warren and Wetmore, who designed the New York's Grand Central Terminal. For generations and decades, people came and loved it, not having to travel to New York City or Atlantic City to see other shows like the Lippincott Stallions. So my request is simple. Please start the process in restoring it to its glory days. If any of you are too young to know either Senator Blair or Judge Coleman, please Google them and you'll see how important they were to the district and the state of New Jersey and their integrity. Thank you very much again for the opportunity of requesting this money be given to Mass Marquette to restore this building.
Thank you, Mayor. Next up, we have Deputy Mayor Amy Quinn.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, please go ahead.
Okay. So I don't have the history that Mayor Moore does, but I just want to talk about Convention Hall's historic significance. I would argue one of the most historic buildings on the East Coast. And this building being renovated and then two music facilities coming back into it is going to be a huge, huge boost to not only Asbury Park, but to the entire region. So I think I speak for the entire mayor and council in support of this application for the tax credits for Madison Marquette. That's it.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. Thomas DeCino?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me? Okay. Yep. Hi,
yes.
I'm Thomas
DeCino. Go ahead. Thank you.
Thomas DeCino, Law Office of Thomas DeCino. I'm an attorney and an Asbury Park historian. I'm a big fan of your cafe program. I love what you've done to help nonprofit save historic buildings they couldn't afford to save. But this application for Asbury Park's Convention Hall is different. The applicant, Madison, is a private equity joint venture, including a foreign entity worth upwards of $10 billion. They don't need hard-earned New Jersey taxpayer monies to save this building. 24 years ago and 16 years ago, they were given sweetheart contracts I can't describe in 3 minutes, but their deal was to make millions of dollars building 3,200 condos, so long as in exchange they saved our historic structures, Convention Hall and Casino. The taxpayers upheld our end. These gentrifiers have condos for sale for $9 million now, but they breached our contract and shuttered Convention Hall and Casino. Think about what you're doing today. giving taxpayer money to a company so they can pay back a debt they owe to those same taxpayers. That's absurd. And rewarding bad behavior is bad public policy. In 3 minutes, I can't list all the long-suffering taxpayer priorities that outweigh bailing out billionaires, like property taxes, education, COLA raises, etc. You know more about every CAFE applicant than me, I grant you that, but not this one. I've studied them for years. You are dealing with bad actors who break contracts. We are 24 years into a 30-year contract with them. 6 years left. They closed Convention Hall while building thousands of condos. The city was discussing suing them this year. Madison is using your CAFE program as a 5-year stall to get to the end of building condos. Then they'll abandon Convention Hall. That's been their plan all along. Convention Hall was built as a lost leader that never made money. They don't want it. That's why they listed it as a disregarded entity under the IRS code so they can bankrupt Convention Hall and not lose the condos. Their powerful white shoe law firms will negotiate nearly invisible off-ramps into your contract. I've seen them do it. You think you can control them with benchmarks, inspections, defaults, and remedies, but I've exposed their contractual dirty tricks. And if you want to check me on that, Google my name, theirs, and Supreme Court Justice Lee Solomon. You're going to need help, and instead, just don't risk it and vote no. There's other ways to save Convention Hall without this. Now, I want to note that you gave a full 6 days notice of this hearing to the state where $75 million is at issue. You should have allowed the people of Asbury Park a full presentation, not 3 minutes. And if later on Madison mentions my name or my speech right now, I want the opportunity to retort. Please be fair about that. Thank you.
Thank you. Celia Morissette, you're on, please unmute yourself. And just a housekeeping note for folks during the public comment. Once you're done speaking, please mute yourself. And if I hear background noise or staff hear background noise while other folks are speaking and you're unable to mute, we're going to mute you. Thank you. Celia, please go ahead.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you all hear me? Okay, great.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Celia Morissette, a 25-year resident of Asbury Park and a co-founder of SOS, which means Save Our Structures, AP. We're a grassroots, resident-led group working to protect the buildings and public spaces that tell our city's stories. Convention Hall and the Paramount Theater are an integral part of our city's history. It's one of the most iconic and unique landmarks on the Jersey Shore and a defining feature of the Asbury Boardwalk. Both are included in New Jersey in the National Register of Historic Places. Our buildings have also recently been recognized as the most intact and culturally layered coastal historic landscapes in the U.S. by the World Monuments Fund, which is an international organization highlighting significant sites. It's been it's worldwide since 1965. Preservation New Jersey has also nominated our buildings to their 2026 list of the 10 most endangered historic places in New Jersey. This recognition further supports why the CAFE funds are critical in protecting the legacy that our structures represent. These buildings were envisioned not merely as destinations, but as civic gathering spaces that reflected the culture, creativity, and aspirations of their time. AP has experienced unprecedented cycles of growth, decline, reinvention, and now finally renewal. We are a thriving destination for music, art, dining, and tourism, and we're heralded for our history of inclusion. Awarding these funds to preserve our cultural facilities offers the city and the state a unique opportunity to illustrate how architecture, planning, public policy can work together to honor the past while creating a vibrant future. We can showcase the starring role that historic spaces can play in contemporary society. We thank you for considering Madison Marquette Retail and Asbury Park for this tax credit award. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So many. Go, keep going down the. I'm going to keep going down the list, Chairman.
Sure.
Yvonne Clayton. Yes. If Yvonne Clayton is on.
Yes. One second.
Wait. Talk.
Oh, good morning. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to speak this morning. I am a lifelong resident of Asbury Park, and I think it is very important that we have this opportunity to speak. What has happened is I grew up here in Asbury Park. I'm sorry, I'm having an issue with my phone. Okay.
We can hear you.
I grew up here in Asbury Park. The Commission Hall has been a part of my life for my entire life. It is a part of the fabric of who I am and what I have experienced here in the city. Convention Hall is where my high school graduation happened. Convention Hall is where I saw little Stevie Wonder for the first time sing Fingertips. Convention Hall is the place where the first time I had the opportunity to see a boat up close because of the boat show. Convention Hall, that's where I had my cotillion and I was presented to society. Convention Hall is so many things to this community, and it can be, again, if given the opportunity to have this cultural event space sitting vacant because we can't use it. It's a shame. It's a travesty. Convention Hall needs to be brought back. It needs to be a place where the community once again has an event space. It needs to be a place where the community can experience the arts. It needs to be a place where once again the community can experience music. I ask you, I implore you, please, please approve this and give this wonderful, wonderful complex back to the city. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sean Imamjoma.
We have a lot.
Good morning. How's everyone? Thank you so much for this opportunity. I am a longtime resident of Asbury Park, and I'm the founder of the Color and Light Festival, which actually for the past 2 years has used the facade of the Paramount Theater and Convention Hall. Last year, it was a free public art event. Last year, we had nearly 17,000 people there. And this year, again, we had tens of thousands of people coming to Asbury Park to enjoy the architecture and projection mapping on this glorious building. I also come from a background of doing Broadway shows and experiencing tours around this country. I'd like to extend this a little bit even further than what our mayor and council people have stated. The Paramount Theater and Convention Hall are not just gems in the crown of the Jersey Shore in New Jersey, but these are very, very rare buildings. The Paramount buildings and the Fox Theaters all across the country that were built in the golden age of film are incredibly rare architectural pieces that will never get built again. There were only a handful of them built across the country, I think maybe 30 Paramount Theaters. They all have a very austere, beautiful look to them, and they're major venues that were selected based on the importance of the communities that they were placed in, Asbury Park being one of the rare communities that got this honor. This absolutely must be saved. They will never be built again. They are not only regional and state icons, they belong to the nation, and they should be kept and renovated. And for generations to come, be another place where we can have community connection in a world that's increasingly isolated. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Eileen Chapman.
Good morning, and thank you for allowing me to speak. I'm Eileen Chapman. I'm a 52-year resident of Asbury Park. I'm on the Asbury Park City Council and also a board member of the Asbury Park Historical Society. Much of what I want to say has already been said, but I still have a few notes as well. The city of Asbury Park has traditionally provided spaces for entertainment, and especially along the boardwalk, Convention Hall, the Paramount, the Casino, the Arthur Pryor Pavilion, theaters like the St. James and Mayfair. And historically, Convention Hall has been the centerpiece of those venues of arts, culture, and tourism events in Asbury Park. Concerts, trade shows, sporting events, roller derby, many events that would attract over 4,000 people to Asbury Park and its boardwalk per show. For the community, it was a location that hosted graduations, cotillions, fundraising events, galas, award ceremonies, and provided a large enough space for the community to gather. The international tourist trade stayed in our hotels, dined in our restaurants, shopped in our stores, because shows in Convention Hall usually ran late. Our businesses also captured a late night crowd, often until midnight. These days, our boardwalk is empty by 8 p.m. Our historically vibrant boardwalk has been severely impacted by the closing of Convention Hall. The impact of Convention Hall on our community and to the world cannot be understated. It's a historical landmark. It is an economic engine. And these tax credits are vital for the restoration of this historic and important building. So thank you for taking this into consideration.
Thank you.
Thank you. Dan Smith. If Dan Smith is on, please unmute. Okay, we're going to go to the folks with their hands raised on Teams. Chuck Latta.
Good morning. I want to thank everyone for having this meeting. My name is Charles Latta. I am a former resident of Asbury Park, and I got very involved around 5 years ago when Convention Hall and Paramount Theater were closed to the public. I actually formed with others a New Jersey 501c3 nonprofit organization, of which I am president. The entity is known as Save Asbury Park's History. We created a Facebook group that now has over 5,000 members that are anxiously following the fate of these historic structures. I am very much in alignment with Tom DeSano in that I believe awarding these credits, while is very important, handing them over to Madison Marquette is something I simply have no faith in. This is the same organization that removed copper panels on Convention Hall over 12 years ago and put them in storage for the purpose of inspecting the steel beams that hold up the second floor of Convention Hall. Here we are 12 years later, the copper panels disappeared, presumably stolen, and this wonderful organization, which is owned by wealthy foreigners, has not spent any money painting this exposed steel, which has been exposed to salt air for 12 years, and possibly now these beams would have to be replaced. How anyone can trust these people is unbelievable to me. Asbury Park received $20 million from the state of New Jersey for boardwalk funds recently and allocated $13 million to Madison Marquette to help reopen the Paramount Theater. After spending hundreds and thousands of dollars on studies, which basically gave us photos of all the cracked tiles on the Paramount Theater building, they reluctantly hired a contractor who began work in May, erecting a bunch of scaffolding and exposing some steel beams. And we were told that the $13 million, which is being spent, will not be sufficient to reopen the Paramount. The problem with the Paramount is a leaking roof, and obviously they did not properly allocate these funds with the priority of reopening the Paramount. I believe that the public money should be dedicated to restoring these buildings at some point, but I don't believe the mechanism of relying on an unreliable foreign-owned company to do work that they previously neglected to do makes any sense whatsoever. Thank you for my opportunity to speak my opinion.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Andrew Hornback.
Hi, good morning. My name is Andrew Hornback. I'm the founder and CEO of Hornback Strategic Services based in Northern New Jersey. I, again, feel like I sound like a broken record here. How can we help the NJEDA overcome inertia when it comes to the Office of Strategic Defense Investment? This is something that was announced about a year ago, actually, by Governor Murphy. And in the press release, there was actually a commentary by current Governor Sherrill backing the creation of this initiative. And thus far as any research I've done, the only action taken related to the Office of Strategic Defense Investment has been the release of the press release. So at this point, my question for the board is there a timeline for OSDI becoming active, or will this initiative become orphaned? And finally, what can we do as part of the defense industry? What can I do as the owner of a business that supports defense contractors help to get this initiative off the ground? Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you.
Chairman, I'm not seeing any other hands raised on Microsoft Teams.
Thanks, Danielle. Do we have to go to the phone at this point?
Yes, please. Let's turn it over to Verizon to open any lines that have registered to speak on the phone.
Ladies and gentlemen, for members of the public on the phone, if you wish to ask a question, please press star then one on your telephone keypad. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing star then two. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, you may press star then one at this time. One moment for our first question. And currently we have two. For the first question is from Teresa Lee Peterson. Please go ahead.
Hi, hello. I just wanted to correct you on my name. It's Teresa Lee with an S. Hi. I'm a former resident of Asbury Park, still very active in the community. In fact, I'm there virtually 7 nights a week to see live music, something that I love very much. I want to begin by making something very clear. I support preserving Convention Hall. This is not opposition to restoration. My concerns are about stewardship, transparency, and accountability when public resources are being used to preserve a historic and public-facing asset. And today, I would like to implore you to hold off on this vote until you can present and assure residents, visitors, and of course, taxpayers that these credits are being awarded with meaningful transparency, accountability, and enforceable oversight. Before additional public support is awarded, we need to ask what maintenance and repair obligations already existed, who was responsible for them, and were those obligations fulfilled? If required maintenance was deferred, we deserve to understand why and whether public resources are now being used to correct conditions another entity was already responsible for preventing or repairing. This community has asked time and time again to trust processes and promises without seeing the results that should accompany that trust. We cannot afford to keep repeating the same process while expecting a different outcome. Until Madison Marquette can produce measurable results demonstrating that the behaviors and practices created these concerns have been corrected, skepticism is not unreasonable. It is responsible stewardship. So measure the checks and check the measures. Accountability is in accounting. Who is responsible for monitoring these credits? What documentation must be submitted? Who independently verifies the work and expenses? What are the milestones? What happens if these milestones aren't met? And can benefits be withheld or clawed back? Sorry. And can the public easily access the award agreement, projected budget, inspections, progress reports, approved changes, or other documentation needed to compare what was promised with what was actually delivered? Convention Hall is nearly a century old. This isn't simply another building project. Who is protecting its historic integrity? What preservation standards govern this work? Who approves the alterations and are qualified historic preservation professionals independently reviewing what's being done? Please don't limit the definition of the public to Asbury Park taxpayers. Convention Hall is part of the cultural and historic fabric of the community. Residents, taxpayers, visitors, musicians, businesses, and the countless people who come to Asbury Park because of Convention Hall all have an interest in its future, particularly the children of the community. Trust should not be a prerequisite for public investment. Trust should be the result of transparency.
Sorry to interrupt you, Teresa, but please conclude your comments. Thank you.
Okay. Trust should be the result of transparency, accountability, and demonstrated performance. I want to see Convention Hall preserved for another 100 years, but please pay attention to the preservation and accountability and hold off on this vote until the public can actually see how we're going to hold this entity accountable. Thank you very much for letting me comment. I appreciate being able to participate in this civic procedure.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Stuart Gelwater. Please go ahead.
Hi. I'm calling as a lifelong devotee of Asbury Park. I've never had the good fortune to live there, but it was the place of my
Stuart,
dreams.
Before you provide your,
yes.
Your Stuart, before you provide your comment, can you please spell your last name?
It's G-E-L-W-A-R-G, Gelwarg. Not the easiest, I'm sorry.
Thank you. Please continue. Thank you.
I just want to let the public and the state know how much these properties mean to me and should mean to the country and the world. And I want the state of New Jersey to really take to heart what Tom DeSeno has put forth, Mr. Latta commented on, and the woman just before me. I just don't think in any way Madison Marquette has ever shown any good faith in their dealings with the properties. I think the sad and sorry state of the casino right now can be laid at their feet when they've had the money and the time, far too much time. So, yes, I believe these are projects worthy of contributing money to save these properties. They are historic, and they should be around for generations to come. But the Trust Madison Marquette, I fear, is a fool's errand here. Anyway, I'll leave it to you, but please look again at what Mr. DeSeno has written and what Mr. Latta and the woman before me has commented on. Thank you.
Thank you. Operator, any other comments?
There are no other comments at this time.
Okay, thank you. Hearing none, I will consider the public comment section of the meeting closed, and I want to thank everybody for their comments on this matter. Obviously, people care deeply, and we appreciate that. Next, we're going to move to the voting elements of the meeting. First, as we do at every board meeting, we give a brief update on the committees that met during the time between board meetings. The policy committee met on August 12th and reviewed several recommendations that are being considered for action today, including an MOU with the New Jersey Innovation Authority pertaining to technology initiatives, a life sciences fund investment, final adoption of proposed rules for the Aspire program, and under clean energy creation of phase two of the NJ Cool program and modifications to the Take Charge program. Staff will present on these voting items. So first up, especially on the MOU with NJ Innovation Authority on technology initiatives.
Thank you. My name is Cecily Kovach, Managing Director of Technology Innovation at the NJEDA. Today I'm presenting the New Jersey AI Supercomputer Initiative. Governor Sherrill, along with former Governor Murphy, recognized that to ensure New Jersey leads in AI, prepares our students and workers for future careers, and creates new economic opportunities, a coordinated statewide strategy is needed. That strategy requires a commitment from state institutions of higher education to take a collaborative approach to developing AI curriculum, partnerships to develop workforce development efforts, and advanced compute power to conduct cutting-edge research. Establishing a state-of-the-art supercomputer is essential to that strategy to give our students, researchers, and workforce the tools they need to succeed in a rapidly changing technological landscape. The state has committed $25 million allocated in the supplement to the fiscal year 2026 budget to fund infrastructure, maintenance, and operation of a new supercomputer. The supercomputer initiative may also receive a donation of at least $25 million in hardware, providing the technology needed to deliver the computational power necessary for advanced research and innovation. In January, an MOU was signed by the state, New Jersey Research Universities, the New Jersey Council of County Colleges, NVIDIA, and the NJAI Hub, expressing their interest in collaborating to develop, deploy, and operate the New Jersey Supercomputer Initiative and thoughtfully use AI for economic development, workforce enhancement, and innovation. By bringing together these stakeholders, the Supercomputer Initiative is well positioned to drive transformative outcomes that benefit the state's economy and its people. We've determined that the EDA needs support for this initiative and identified the New Jersey Innovation Authority, or NJIA, as the most suitable entity to assume obligations under the appropriation. The EDA intends to transfer the $25 million allocation, minus a $175,000 administrative approval fee and associated obligations under the appropriation, to the Innovation Authority. NJEDA will release funds to the Innovation Authority for eligible supercomputer expenses in tranches based on milestones as outlined in the MOU. To fulfill the appropriation requirement that funds be transferred to a nonprofit organization, the Innovation Authority identified the National Center for Civic Innovation, or NCCI, to establish the Supercomputer Initiative. The Innovation Authority will transfer the $25 million allocation, less the administrative approval fee, to NCCI. NCCI will set up the Supercomputer Initiative with long-term management anticipated to transfer to another nonprofit. NJEDA funding under the MOU is contingent upon a donation of at least $25 million in hardware. If not received, the EDA has the right to terminate the MOU. So in conclusion, we are requesting the members to approve an MOU with the New Jersey Innovation Authority to transfer $25 million, less an administrative approval fee, to Innovation Authority, who will be responsible for EDA's obligations under the appropriation, approve the utilization of $175,000 as an administrative approval fee to be used by the EDA to administer funding and review the documentation and reporting for the Supercomputer Initiative, and delegated authority to the CEO to execute all documents, including the MOU, and to extend the MOU for up to 2 years. There is a confidential addendum. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
And again, the source of the funding here is a allocation from the 26 budget, correct?
Correct, a supplement to the 2026 budget.
Any board members' comments or questions? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Tillman motion.
Thanks, Tim. Second?
Second, Weinrich.
Thanks, Josh. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions?
Robert Chimko will have to stay in there. I own stock in NVIDIA.
We'll mark that as okay. as a recusal, Robert.
Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, my apologies.
I guess as many people own stock in NVIDIA, but we will consider that a recusal. Any other comments? Okay, hearing none, it is approved. Next, under Strategic Innovation Centers, Tim Rolander.
Morning. Thank you, Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to present the recommendation for a commitment of up to $5 million to create the Portal Velocity Fund 2 NJ Limited Partnership managed by Portal Innovations. Portal is in the market now, raising their third fund, targeting $100 million to invest in companies that align with the Portal Incubator strategy. NJEDA's capital will seed a $10 million New Jersey-only investment sidecar. Investment into New Jersey companies will be matched dollar for dollar by the main Velocity Fund, which is an approach that EDA has taken across our SIC portfolio and through our specialized fund-of-funds initiatives like our Life Science Fund and Opportunity Funds to ensure that capital is available directly to support the growth of innovative businesses in the state. EDA will be joined in the New Jersey exclusive sidecar by RWJ Barnabas Health with a matching $5 million commitment. And the partnership with RWJ Barnabas is a boon, bringing insights they can offer on sourcing relevant technologies, diligence insights, and strategic engagement with companies. Their participation speaks volumes to the level of community and ecosystem that is coalescing in this area. This partnership strategy is not new for Portal. Co-investing in the past with strategics like Eli Lilly, Novo Nordisk, and Appy. The recommendation today follows from Portal selection as the operator of the NJ Innovation Hub Strategic Innovation Center at the Helix in New Brunswick, which just opened for its first 18 early stage tenants. And once fully occupied, Portal will work hands-on with 25 to 40 tenants at a time to support cost-efficient value creation. And this closeness will provide Portal with a unique view to identify and shepherd quality investments. Portal's presence fills a capital void for life science companies at their earliest stages, leveraging unique knowledge, and access. The fund is ideally positioned to capitalize on current market dynamics, given the manager's experience working in markets less traveled by the investor community, like Ohio, Indiana, Georgia, and of course, New Jersey. I'll conclude reiterating the request for approval of the commitment for up to $5 million to create the Port Velocity Fund 2 NJ Limited Partnership. Authorization to the CEO to execute all documents required is detailed in the memo. Delegation to the CEO to select the appropriate funding source between SSBCI and SIC Capital following all federal guidelines and established EDA policies, and a 4.5% administrative fee to the EDA plus associated authority legal costs as allowed by IRF statute. Thank you very much, and questions are welcome, if any.
And Tim, again, just as we discussed in committee, this is essentially, we've already funded the creation of the Helix, the entity. This is a fund to invest in companies that come out of the Helix, correct?
That's correct. Yeah, the Helix was approved in 2021 investment, I should say. So you're absolutely correct. This is a bolt-on supplemental strategy.
And we've done this in several other cases, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Danielle, if you or the governance team, if you flip to the prior slide, we offered a breakout of EDA's capital invested into strategic innovation centers across investment, capital expenditure, and OPEX. So it's consistent with prior strategy.
Any questions, board members? Questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Move it, Weinrich.
Thanks, Josh. Second?
Robert Chimko.
Thanks, Robert. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions?
I'm recused from this one because RWJ is my employer.
All right, so that's Tim noting his recusal. Anyone else? Okay, hearing none, the motion is approved. Next on clean energy, Jessica, on modifications to the Take Charge program.
Morning, everyone. My name is Jessica Perineet. I am an analyst on the clean energy team, and I'm going to be presenting our modifications to the Take Charge program, which was originally approved last October. The launch was paused due to the change in administration, and these modifications now align the program better with statewide energy goals. So the overarching goal remains the same. This is a grant program supporting electric vehicle charging infrastructure projects in New Jersey for private commercial fleets. However, we are now requiring as part of the scope an originally optional component, which is new renewable energy and battery storage, and or battery storage to power the chargers. Doing this supports new goals at the state level, which the Sherrod administration put forth with the first two executive orders. And it will also enable participation in virtual power plants, which refer to a wide range of programs that are going to continue to be developed in the state that allow entities to use distributed energy resources to address electricity demand at an aggregate level. The initial allocation is changing from $50 million as was proposed in October to $25 million, just given the new priorities we have in the state, and this allows the team an opportunity to develop different programs to address those directly. The grant award is also changing. The original minimum grant award amount was $50,000. This has been increased to $100,000 per project to ensure we have basically robust projects applying according to this new larger scope. Additionally, there was originally a 5% bonus in the reimbursement for any projects with renewable energy generation and or battery energy storage systems. However, this has been removed as it's now a requirement for project eligibility. Next slide, please. Most of the other details remain the same with regard to eligibility. However, one change I do want to highlight is that originally in the eligible uses of funding, on-site renewable energy generation and storage systems were subject to a 50% cap relative to the total eligible costs. This has been increased to 60%, given now they're a required component of the project. The disbursement process remains the same. And in terms of compliance, the final change I want to highlight, although we are still requiring that the awardees use a compliant network service provider, we're also requiring that by the end of their three-year compliance period, they provide proof of enrollment in a virtual power plant program or managed charging program. Thank you so much, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any comments or questions on the suggested modifications? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Motion, Hillman.
Thanks, Tim. Second?
Dragon, second.
Thanks, Elizabeth. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the modifications are approved. Next, Lloyd on the NJ Cool Program Phase 2.
Thanks, Chairman. Morning, everybody. I'm Lloyd Lomolino, Product Officer with the Clean Energy Team. I'm here on behalf of our Clean Energy Team to go over the proposed program updates to the New Jersey Cool Pilot Program. The goal of this program is to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from existing commercial, industrial, or institutional buildings that are completing HVAC and energy efficiency upgrades and installing on-site renewable energy or energy storage systems. Phase 2 of the program builds off of the successes we accomplished through Phase 1 of the program, which was funded by $30 million of regional greenhouse gas initiative funding. Phase 1 was launched in April of 2024 and fully subscribed by May 2026. We received 54 total applications plus additional applications to a wait list. Once our projects are completed, we will be generating significant emission savings, reduce energy use, and developing new renewable energy throughout New Jersey's overburdened communities. Can you go to the next slide, please? The proposed changes to phase two of the program aim to further align the New Jersey Cool Pilot Program's goals with Governor Sherrill's energy priorities that were laid out in Executive Orders 1 and 2. The program updates cover changes to the applicant eligibility, add new requirements for project scope, and request delegate authority to broaden the geographic eligibility and funding for the program. Phase two will use $25 million of REGI funds. And like phase one, phase two will be open to projects within New Jersey's overburdened communities or adjacent census blocks. The program is reimbursement based and will provide grants that cover 50% of total eligible project costs. Grants can range from $50,000 up to $1 million. And a 10% bonus will be available to projects completing full building electrification. The program is going to be open to select commercial, industrial, institutional buildings within eligible property classes. Commercial and industrial buildings will be required to have less than $5 million in annual revenue, and a single applicant will only be eligible for a total of $3 million in total grant awards. Eligible projects will now be required to complete one scope from two separate categories. The first category is a new category right into the program. This covers renewable energy generation or energy storage systems on site. And the second category is being carried over from the pilot program phase one, and this is clean heating and cooling systems installation. The request today is for board approval to launch phase two of the New Jersey Cool program with updated applicant and scope requirements, delegated authority to expand statewide eligibility after 1 year, permission to reallocate unused phase one funds to phase two, and to increase funding from $25 million up to $50 million if there are additional REGI funding available. Please let me know if you have any questions.
Lloyd, you may have said this and I apologize. Do we know if there are leftover funds from phase one?
We're currently finalizing the last approvals for grant awards from phase one. So there is a little bit of money that is potentially available, but we do anticipate that if projects drop, more would be available for some reason. So we're writing this into this program spec so that we can carry over any unused funding.
And the source here is REGI funds, right?
That's correct.
Any other comments, questions from board members? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve the creation of phase two?
Dragon motion.
Move it.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Fred, I'll consider that a second. With Elizabeth moving. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recused, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, phase two is approved. Next is a modification to retrofit NJ, Andy Garcia.
Hey, good morning. My name is Andy Garcia. I'm here for a quick modification to the Retrofit New Jersey program. The program was approved in October of 2025. In June of 2026, $79 million in grant award were presented. And in July of this year, the program was approved for round two. We are just coming here today to change to modify the definition of an institutional entity. Currently, institutional buildings are defined as those that serve a nonprofit or public purpose, such as library, hospital, public school, institution of higher education, municipal utility, public recreation or cultural facility, or government entity, with by state and state agencies excluded unless they are education or healthcare related. We are just requesting a modification to expand the institutional definition to include privately owned 100% affordable housing that's deed restricted for a minimum of 30 years or compliant with the New Jersey Uniform Housing Affordability Controls. We are doing this to comply with Executive Order Number 17 on housing affordability. Thank you, and happy to take any questions.
So that's the only change here is the inclusion of affordable housing as defined.
Correct, yes.
Okay. Any questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Motion, Cruz.
Thanks, Aaron. Second?
Dragon, second.
Thanks, Elizabeth. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the modification is approved. Thank you. Josh, you want to give a report on the incentives committee meeting?
Yes, thank you, Chairman. The NJEDA incentives committee met on August 10th and reviewed several recommendations that are being considered for action today, including an application under the Cultural Arts Facilities Expansion Program and two applications under the Digital Media Tax Credit Program. And a modification to an approved transformative residential mixed-use Aspire project. Staff will present these items as part of today's agenda. Thank you.
Thanks, Josh. Okay, first up under incentives is CAFE and Madison Asbury, and I think Paul is going to start.
Yeah, good morning, Chairman. Thank you, and good morning, everyone. Just some members of the board, as the team has brought a few requests over the past several months, and we'll likely bring several throughout the balance of the year. We thought it'd be a good idea to give the full board, right? We always brief the committee on the program, but to give the full board a quick refresher of the Cultural Arts Facilities Expansion Program, thankfully known as CAFE, because to say the cultural arts part all the time is trouble. To be eligible for this program, the applicant must be a cultural arts institution which will have ownership or lease space in the cultural arts facility and will operate the facility. Additionally, the project must be open to the public. Cultural arts institutions may include government entities, not-for-profits, whose primary mission is arts and culture, and for-profit businesses that are receiving federal or state historic tax credits. By law, the program allows for up to 100% of eligible project costs to be subsidized with a per project cap of $75 million and an overall program allocation of $1.2 billion. The funding source, like most of the other large-scale incentive programs, is a performance-based tax credit program that we issue the credits over a five-year period of time, meaning they need to complete the project, certify the costs, and comply with requirements stated in the law and regulations before receiving a nickel's worth of state assistance. CAFE is not a cash grant, nor is it something that's issued up front. Applicants will have up to 4 years to complete their project. Once completed, costs have to be certified, compliance with the rules need to be verified, and the applicant then starts to receive annual credits valued at 20% of their award for 5 years. Throughout that period of time, the project is monitored for ongoing compliance and is in jeopardy of partially or losing their award, fully losing their award, excuse me, if they were at, if they fall out of compliance. How does one apply for the program and what's the process? Although currently closed, the EDA held two application cycles in the latter half of 2025 for facilities all over New Jersey, resulting in receiving 39 applications totaling just over $1.4 billion of requests. The application itself is pretty intense, requiring a significant amount of information, as folks are requesting a significant amount of assistance. This information includes things such as letters of support from local officials, letters of intent or commitments from the tax credit investors and lenders, evidence of folks meeting the equity requirements, evidence of the ability to fundraise if needed, and a myriad of other requirements. Art being subjective, the team doesn't make a determination of what's good or bad art. We focus on the merits of the project itself. Does the project meet the requirements of the law and rules? And are there credits needed to facilitate the success of the project? To do that, we've engaged a handful of different entities to work with our team to ensure projects are not being over-enriched and that costs are reasonable for the intended work. Although the program was originally created as a competitive solicitation, we continue to work under that premise, but with a hybrid approach, as the law was modified and allowed the authorities board to transfer additional resources as needed. For those of you on the board in November of 2025, you may recall taking that action and approving the transfer of approximately $138 million from the Aspire Emerge allocation, which allowed the team to advance files as they are ready to move. As folks need to meet a minimum score to succeed, but are not necessarily ranked against each other. To date, the authority has approved approximately $259 million worth of credits to support seven projects across the state. At this point, I'd be happy to address any questions that you may have about the program.
Go ahead.
No, sorry, Chairman, go ahead.
I was going to say, why don't we go specifically to Asbury Park, and then we can come back. Does that make sense?
Your show, sir. Happy to do that.
Okay. I mean, Tim, unless your question you wanted to ask now, or
yeah, I can wait. Why don't we do that?
Okay.
Paul, it's Josh. You touched on this both in committee and just now, but I just want to confirm two things. One, in terms of when money is distributed, it is after we see compliance and performance with the project and milestones being reached, and funds are dispersed after that. Is that correct?
That is correct, sir. Yes. So basically, depending upon when a project is approved, folks may monetize those credits. They may look to hold those credits and use them to offset their own direct obligation. But the authority itself or the state does not actually issue a tax credit to an applicant until the project's been completed, certified by an independent CPA, run through the compliance process to ensure that all labor standards are held in accordance with things. If it happens to be a residential project, to ensure that, I guess there could be, we haven't had many residential aspects in CAFE, but on our Aspire program that you see on a regular basis, but to ensure that all things are done in accordance with the rules, that certification package is submitted, team reviews it, and then we start to issue the credits on the pro rata share depending upon the program, right? CAFE is a 5-year deal, Aspires are 5 or 10, emerge or seven, you know, so depending upon the scope of that project. And then throughout the compliance period, there's also an opportunity every year or annually, they need to submit a certification process to ensure that the project is still in compliance. And upon review of that, we would issue that subsequent year's worth of credits.
Super, that's helpful. And the other thing, just confirming, you said that, you know, CAFE projects are not, ranked in proportion to one another, but there is the minimum scoring of I think 40 to get approval. And I just wanted to confirm that this project went through the same scoring rubric as all the other CAFE projects. And I think you said it was scored at a 73.
I don't recall what the score was. I think Elizabeth may touch base on that, but certainly the project was scored in accordance with the programs as scoring matrix and rules. So yes, every project gets scored to ensure that it at least meets the minimum, but they are not ranked against each other. We wouldn't have ranked a project that might be on the agenda today against the battleship project that we approved a few months back.
Right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other comments generally on the program, or do we want to go to the specific action today?
Chair, I just got a couple questions. It's Fred.
Yep.
So, first of all, I've got great faith in our staff. I've been shown over the years they're excellent at their job duties, but certainly there was some significant opposition today. Please assure me that our staff has done their due diligence in vetting this applicant, and two, that all the safeguards are in place should they not fulfill for us to recover our credits.
Every applicant, Fred, has gone through our sister agency reviews and checks, ensured to be, I'll say, good corporate citizens in that regard with our sister agencies of Department of Labor, DEP, taxation, et cetera, to ensure that they are acting as they should be. And then internally, as far as for this project, for the upcoming project in particular, but in general, all of them are reviewed for cost reasonableness to ensure the projects are not being over enriched and things of that nature. We, as you know, have a department of staff that are keen on the workforce and making sure that prevailing wage and affirmative action, as well as contractor registration, all that other good stuff that goes along with it is done in accordance with things. That paperwork all gets vetted and understood and ensured to be complete and accurate. So that is part of the one, it's part of the get going project for the project to start, but also it's part of the compliance package as the applicant needs to certify at the end of the project, as well as ongoing payroll reports and inspections and things of that nature.
So one of the common themes by even the objectors today was the need for this project, how this is a great benefit for Asbury Park. And I agree with that. And I, with faith in the EDA staff to do their jobs, I can support this project.
Let's hear about the project first.
Yeah, I was going to say, Elizabeth had presented on it first. So let's if there's anything else generally on the program, if not, I'd suggest we go into the project specifically. And, you know, I have some questions, for example, about the, I think we had SCP or Sterling do some work on the, you know, reasonableness, et cetera. So let's go into the project if we can. Unless,
at this point,
unless anybody else wants to talk.
If not, I'll turn over to Elizabeth Lindbrick, who's the director of the program, and to kind of run through the specifics.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Chairman. So this is the Asbury Park Convention Hall Music and Performance Venues Restoration, Revitalization, and Modernization Project. The applicant is Madison Asbury, LLC, and it's located at 1300 Ocean Avenue, Asbury Park, Monmouth County, right on the boardwalk. The goal of the project is to rehabilitate the Asbury Park Convention Hall complex, which includes both those theaters that we talked about, the Convention Hall and Paramount Theater, that had been closed since around 2021 due to structural and safety concerns and turn it into a world-class year-round performing arts center. So again, it contains Paramount Theater, which is over 67,000 square feet and 1,600 seats. The Grand Arcade, which runs through the center, that's where the retail space is, that's about 32,000 square feet. And then Convention Hall itself is over 150,000 square feet with 3,200 stadium-type seating in there. Project also includes infrastructure upgrades as well as exterior repairs and elevator access. Construction has actually started by the applicant at risk back in April, and they have a 34-month expected timeline to complete construction after board approval. Again, this project is intended to preserve the complex's architectural significance while modernizing the infrastructure to meet current safety, accessibility, and production standards. And as you heard in the public comments and as reported by the applicant, while Asbury Park is experiencing a renaissance, the sustainability of this momentum and the preservation of its cultural assets and identity are not guaranteed. The Convention Hall complex really stands at the center of this ecosystem and represents an irreplaceable cultural asset. And if this historic structure is lost, it cannot be recovered. Staff has done our due diligence. We have reviewed the application for eligibility and confirmed that it does meet program requirements. The statute and rules do permit for-profit applicants when the project is receiving federal historic rehabilitation tax credits or the state historic preservation tax credits. The application meets this condition, and the applicant has provided a Part 2 federal historic preservation certification application.
Elizabeth, just to interrupt. So the qualification here is because they've received the federal tax credit or historic credits.
Yes, that is the qualification because they are receiving a federal historic tax credit. An application also meets the definition of a cultural arts institution as it is a performing arts venue. And pursuant to our program rules, this facility will be required to be accessible and open to the public for at least 4 events per month on average during their eligibility period. And the applicant has actually indicated they tend to surpass that threshold requirement, targeting approximately 90 performances per year. We can go to the next slide and to discuss the financials. Total project costs are around $150 million. That includes the property value. Eligible costs before looking at the program cap would be around $128 million. However, we do have soft cost caps as well as a program cap that Paul mentioned earlier of $75 million per project. So that is the recommended award amount here. The funding sources are also shown here. So they have a bridge loan from Midlock for about $106 million, Asbury Park Boardwalk subgrant for $13 million. The federal historic tax credit of about $20 million, although a portion of that is available to be monetized at the start. They are using, and they have also included the special construction contingency of $5 million, as well as the property value of $21.9 million. We do have a equity requirement that the applicant contribute at least 20% equity, and that does include property value. And here it also includes the federal historic tax credit and the boardwalk grant, putting them well above the threshold. They plan to sell the tax credits at 90 cents on the dollar, which exceeds the program minimum of 85 cents on the dollar. And then SPD, as you mentioned, did a cost reasonableness review and found that the budget is responsibly assembled for an early stage of a project development, but they do recommend some cost discipline as detailed in the memo. Staff concludes the applicant has adequate and bona fide sources of funding to cover all project costs and that there is a reasonable expectation that these sources of funding will be available to complete the project. And finally, based on that review, staff has a reasonable expectation that the applicant and lead development entity, Madison Asbury Retail LLC, will continue to be a viable entity throughout the project construction timeline. We had another third-party financial reviewer, HR&A Advisors, who also looked at the project and concluded that the IRR analysis confirms that the CAFE award does not over-enrich the project, and staff concur and additionally conclude this project meets the statutory requirement of generating a below market return and that a project financing gap does exist. There's also a special condition that was included in the memo, and that is because this applicant also has a pending historic property reinvestment program, or HPRP, the state historic tax credit, which is also administered by the authority, requesting $8 million in state historic tax credits. The HPRP requires compliance with federal standards, and the applicant must still submit additional construction drawings for that application to be reviewed. Staff recommends including a condition that by March 1st, 2027, the applicant must submit all the required documents for the HPRP and also receive their HPRP approval within 12 months of the CAFE approval. And if those conditions aren't met, and that they would receive a future HPRP award, the CAFE award would then be reduced dollar for dollar by the amount of the HPRP award. And I also have one just very brief correction. The memo understates the amount of CAFE funds available by $65 million, and that was due to an anticipated project that we were planning to bring to the board, but is not yet being presented today. So finally, our recommendation is that we have reviewed this application and find that it does satisfy the eligibility requirements, and it is recommended that the members approve the CAFE tax credit award in the amount of $75 million, with the final award being based on the project's eligible cost and the conditions noted in the menu, in the memo. Thank you. This concludes my presentation, and happy to provide any clarification or additional details.
Any questions? Tim, did you have a question you wanted to ask?
Yeah, I think Josh probably got to it. The one concern I think we all heard in public comment was the accountability piece, and I think Paul had a pretty good answer. I don't know if Paul or Linda had anything else he wanted to add, but it's important that there's accountability around it. It sounds like we have those guards in place.
We certainly do. And it's in the memo, there are certain things that are post-approval conditions that have to be satisfied within 1 year of board approval. And then there are additional requirements, as Paul mentioned, like throughout that, they actually have to complete the construction in the 4 year time frame. And then, along the way, there are lots of checks, labor and compliance, CPA check at certification, to verify, that everything was done in accordance with the program requirements. And again, they don't get any state assistance until they have certified and we have verified that the construction is complete, and then it is dispersed over a five-year period, 20% per year during that five-year period, and it's a tax credit. And again, throughout that period, there is additional compliance and certifications required. And if they do not meet our requirements, there are opportunities for forfeiture or up to recapture of the tax credit as well.
So they are at risk effectively until they complete construction.
Yes, they are.
And open and certify, the four times a month open to the public, et cetera, all the other conditions.
All those other conditions as well, they have to meet those. So yeah, it goes beyond just the construction, right? Like if they are not open to the public and having the four events per month, they would not meet those conditions and would, I believe it's a forfeit for that year.
Any other comments or questions? But I sort of, I back to, I sort of I'm in the same school as Fred, which is, you know, we clearly think there's clearly a need for this. We heard that from the community and the concerns that were voiced about accountability and performance. It seems to me you've addressed, you know, again, they are at risk until they perform. Any other comments, questions, Robert, anybody? Okay. Okay, hearing none, could we hear a motion to approve?
Move it, Weinrich.
Thanks, Josh. Second?
Second, Hellman.
Thanks, Tim. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions?
Robert Chimko, hold on a minute. I got to recuse myself there. We got a project labor agreement on that project. We're working there as we speak.
Great. And in your capacity as with the IBEW, correct?
Correct.
Anyone else? Okay, hearing none, it is approved. Next, digital media tax credits. Chris Delvecchio.
Thank you, Chairman. I just wanted to start off by making a note here that we are oversubscribed on the digital media side of the program. However, the statute allows us to continue making approvals using funds from future fiscal years allocations. Going forward, we are going to be taking digital media applicants in the order that their applications were deemed complete for fairness. Right now, these two projects that we are bringing to board will be approved using funds from state fiscal year 2028 because there's only $11.1 million remaining in state fiscal year 2027 after previous approvals. So having said that, under the Digital Media Tax Credit Program, MBA Properties, Inc. has applied for their fiscal year 2024 digital media content production expenses, including expenses for work done at their headquarters in Secaucus, where they manage and create a library of digital media content, such as games, shows, player interviews, highlight clips, and behind-the-scenes features. They also conduct all their social media operations from their Secaucus location. A reminder that as part of eligibility for credits under the program, project must meet two expense eligibility thresholds. The first is that 50% of the applicant's qualified digital media content production expenses must be for wages and salaries paid to full-time W-2 employees working in New Jersey. The second is the applicant must incur at least $2 million in qualified digital media content production expenses through vendors that are fully authorized to do business in New Jersey. This project does meet both, next slide, please. This project does meet both eligibility requirements with 52% of its qualified spend incurred for wages and salaries paid to New Jersey workers, and they're clearing the $2 million vendor spend threshold with $22.5 million in vendor spend. This brings them to $47,762,439 in qualified spend for a total award of $16,239,229. Happy to address any questions, comments, or concerns about this project.
Hey, Tim, Chris, I don't have any questions about the project, but just back on your comments, I'm trying to understand. They're getting tax credits out of the fiscal year 2028 budget?
Correct. We're approving them using funds from state fiscal year 2028. We're approving them. However, we are not able to actually issue the tax credit to them until we are actually in state fiscal year 2028. So assuming they're approved today, they would have to wait until July 1st of next year in order to actually have the credit issued.
Okay, thank you.
For sure.
Anyone comments or questions on MBA properties specifically? Okay, hearing none, could we hear a motion to approve?
Motion, Hellman.
Second, Elijah.
Josh. Phil, that's the second. All right.
Yes.
All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, NBA is approved. Next is Audible.
Thank you, Chairman. So this project also would be drawing from state fiscal year 2028, and again, they would need to wait until we are actually in state fiscal year 2028 in order to have the credit issued. Assuming this is approved, we would have $10.5 million remaining in state fiscal year 2028 to go forward with. Again, this is under digital media. Audible Inc. has applied for their fiscal year 2023 digital media content production expenses, mostly for work done at their headquarters in Newark on the creation of Audible original audiobooks. This project also meets both eligibility requirements, with 91% of its qualified spend incurred for wages and salaries paid to full-time New Jersey workers, and clearing the $2 million vendor spend threshold with about $3.9 million in vendor spend. This brings them to $42,044,869 in qualified spend for a total award of $14,295,255. Happy to address any questions or comments or concerns about this one as well.
Any comments or questions? So hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Dragon motion.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Second.
Second, Roger.
Okay, Phil, thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the award is approved. Next, we have two Aspire items. First is a presentation on Aspire rules, presented by Julian Pierre.
Chair, before we begin, in my prior role as president and CEO of Newark Alliance, I submitted formal comments on these rules, and so I'm going to be recused from this board action, even though I'm a non-voting member.
Thank you, Evan.
Thank you, Chairman. Good morning. We're seeking board approval for the final adoption of Aspire 3.0 rules, which were especially adopted in July of 2025, and to adopt a policy establishing a non-exhaustive list of target populations included in the program's definition of individuals with special needs, which is identical to the list promulgated by our sister agency, HMFA. As background, Aspire 3.0 rules were specially adopted July 30th, 2025. The public comment period for Mitch was closed in November of 2025. What is key is that these specially adopted rules expire in January of 2027. After review of the comments received, we're recommending no changes to the rules. We are, however, recommending that the members adopt a non-exhaustive list of categories under the definition of individuals with special needs. These, as stated, are identical to those identified by HMFA and established for the administration of the Special Needs Housing Trust Fund. Individuals with special needs is a defined term in the statute and is defined as individuals with mental illness, individuals with physical and developmental disabilities, and individuals in other emerging special needs groups identified by the authority or developed in consultation with other state agencies. HMFA's guidelines include categories that are not named in our statutory definition of individuals with special needs. A few of these categories include victims of domestic violence, disabled and/or homeless veterans, and youth aging out of resource family care. This policy would be consistent with the statutory definition and would provide the authority with latitude to consult with our change or update the list as needed. moving to adopt the Aspire 3.0 rules as final is consistent with the pause on the new Aspire applications as announced during July's board meeting. It protects previously approved and current applications pending in the pipeline, as the specially adopted Aspire 3.0 rules have an expiration date of January 2027. If we fail to act to adopt the Aspire 3.0 rules as final prior to this expiration, the Aspire rules will automatically revert back to Aspire 2.0 rules, which will create uncertainty for previously approved and current pending applications alike. The authority is reviewing all aspects of the program to determine the best ways to strengthen it during the pause. and adopting the 3.0 rules as final without change will provide the program and the authority with a clean slate and to support the authority's goal of updating the program in a fiscally sound, strategically targeted, and efficient manner. The inclusion of these categories also furthers the purpose of the creation of the special mission nonprofit projects as a distinct project type. The defined list of the HBFA guidelines in the definition allows the authority to finance a wider range of projects targeted to serve populations with special needs. Thank you. Happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve the final adoption as recommended?
Motion.
Elizabeth, that'll be a motion, and Josh, I'll consider that a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions other than Evan as previously noted? Okay, hearing none, the recommendation is approved. Next matter is presentation on 533 Main Street, Aspire Credit. I am going to recuse from this discussion as my prior employer, Goldman Sachs, is contributing equity to this project. I am recused on this board action, and so given that, I've asked Josh to chair the board through the next vote.
Thank you, Chair. Susan, you're going to take us through this?
Yes, sir. Good Super. Morning. as you heard, this is a modification request for 533 Main Street LLC. This was an award that was approved back in September of 25. It's a five-year Aspire tax credit for 80% of eligible costs, not to exceed $297.9 million for the construction of a nine-story, 431,000-square-foot single-phase transformative residential project in East Orange. So the reason for the modification is really just that the project has moved forward, firming up its financing structure. In doing so, the applicant entity that was to be 15% from our lead development entity, Triangle Equities, and 85% from a Goldman entity has changed. Goldman has exited the ownership structure and now has been replaced by two new investors. Now, Sistema Capital Management will join our lead development entity to own 23% and Fengate Capital Management to own the 77% remaining. In doing this, there's a new special purpose entity created called Great Church Phase 1B Holdings LLC. They would like to be the new applicant named. The prior applicant entity had Goldman in that ownership structure, so that needed to be replaced. Also during this time, they have firmed up their design. They have installed a guaranteed maximum contract for their construction. So that resulted in a very small shift in size from 544,000 square feet to 535,000 square feet and a healthy decrease in their budget from $425 million down to $390 million. So these changes result in an updated award that will be decreased from $297.9 million to $264.3 million. So again, the request is to update that applicant name to recognize the changes in size, budget, and resulting award. Be glad to answer any questions.
Susan, I think you mentioned that this change will have no impact on the timing and the execution of the project.
Correct. Correct. Except these very modest changes to the size, which I think is 8%, there's nothing that's physically happening to the project. It's chugging along as expected.
Thank you. Other questions? Okay. Hearing none, I'll accept a motion to approve.
Dragon, motion.
Thank you, Elizabeth. And second?
Second, Cruz.
Thank you. If no discussion, we'll proceed with the vote. All in favor, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed or abstain? Hearing none, this passes.
Thank you.
And just, thank you, Josh.
Just re-noting the chair's recusal on that one.
Yep. Thanks. Although it sounds like Goldman Sachs is no longer involved. But moving forward, board member Adam Evan.
So just two here today, two delegated authority memos this month pertaining to credit and finance projects and real estate. So the first is a credit underwriting delegated authority approvals from the July 2026 time period and real estate development construction infrastructure delegated authority from January to March of 2026.
Thank you. Any other business or additional comments? Okay, hearing none, first I want to thank everybody for accommodating us with a special board meeting here in August, and hope you enjoy the rest of the summer and have a good Labor Day. We will see you in person in September. And with that, can I hear a motion to adjourn?
Robert Chimko.
Thank you, Robert. Second?
Dragon, second.
Thanks, Elizabeth. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, hearing none, the meeting is adjourned. Thanks, everybody. Have a great rest of the summer.
Thank you.
Everybody, have a good summer.
That concludes our conference for today. Thank you for your participation and for using Verizon Conferencing Services. You may now disconnect.